using the head position optimization, you can reduce the working set to the half in when you have two coffees. Something like that I was trying to work on.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable, though it is going to be hard to convince people that you can have two copies of everything on disk.
No. It's not in order to say that you should have this amount of copies in order to see this, but just to show theoretically this. I mean, there cannot be a better algorithm than this.
You mean a better?
This is the optimum.
A better scheduling algorithm.
Oh, for example, let's assume there is an optimal scheduling algorithm and you add copies of all the blocks, you will always, with this, you cannot be worse than the optimal, you would be the optimal. Because you will reduce the working, that, something like that, is what I'm trying to do, say.
You try to understand what you're saying. So the algorithm that we are using is
moving to the closest position.
Moving to the closest duplicate.
Exactly, which seems like greedy algorithm, which may not be the optimal, but from the experiments it seems that it's actually reducing the working set in half.
Right. Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe that's because the algorithm is actually the optimal.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why we do not want to use elevator is because the reason elevator is important is so that you do not end up starving requests on either side of the disk, either end of the disk. And in this case, using an elevator style algorithm is...
In this case, we are not working with the elevator because it's a synchronous code. But I don't know. I was just thinking about that. And for example, another thing to consider is that we are picking the closest to the head the moment we are putting the request in the queue, not at the moment the request is being dispatched. So how this compares to that as well?
That's a good point. So we do not have this choice that the scheduler makes because we don't involve the scheduler in the decision making process.
But we could. So how would we compare against that?
The point is, if we have substantial performance gain without having to do that, I guess we don't need to do it. Because it may turn out that they are identical.
For example, that would be nice to determine. Not with experiments.
But we could do it using, for instance,
simulation
or traces.
Yeah.
It may be easier to do it that way.
Yeah. I was doing something like that, but using the idea that the average seek is 1.5, and I came up with something, but now you tell me it's 1/3, so it might not make that thing as much.
I don't know if that really matters all that much, whether you use 1/2 or 1/3, because it's all relative in the end.
Yeah, no, but in this case, it was like the numbers were magically adding to something.
In half?
Yeah,
in 1/2?
With 1/2.
They may still add to something magical.
In 1/3, okay.
Yeah. But I think what we need to talk about is our next direction, right? Because it seems that you already have invested substantial amount of time coming up with these graphs for starting and dynamic similarity,
yeah,
which I think is very interesting and important.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now we have to start looking at some real workloads.
Yeah, that's the second thing. And yeah, I'm replaying with the real workload as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and
are you able to sort of partition the improvements due to the various?
Yeah, that's the the next thing. For the static similarity, what I did with the web traces is it's minimal because there are not that much copies.
If I can find one more one?
Yeah, next one.
So, yeah.
So you're saying that, so these are the web traces
yeah.
that you got from Eric?
Yeah, so there are only two VMs.
Okay.
And so there are not enough copies to, I mean, the static similarity is it's not even near to 1.3 or something. It's very little.
Okay, yeah. So you have the two, the block checksums for these two disks?
Yeah, so so what I'm doing is that I have all these requests, So for all the requests, I'm writing the content I have from the checksum.
Okay.
And then I'm replaying the trace with the module.
Okay.
And for the head scheduling optimization, you can see that, I mean, with 1.3 something copies per block, you can have you can have the working set reduced to everything by 1.3, which is pretty much the same, so you won't see.
I see what you mean. So
you need to, that's a point, that's like an argument to say we need to
make more copies.
To artificially create more copies. Then there is the problem of picking the more convenient block copy.
I see. Okay, so.
So from this, that's the reason for we can show to make the point that for the other optimization creating copies.
So in terms of the caching optimization, do you see any?
Yeah, in that sense, yeah, there is a lot, but that's what you would expect, right?
What is a lot?
I don't have numbers. It's not that precise thing. I mean, there is a. I mean, what I'm counting in the modules are hits, and there are many hits, that's what I can say. Compared to the number of requests, there are many hits.
So, I mean, is there a percentage?
No, I don't have that. But there are, let's say, 10,000 requests, and I might see maybe 1,000 hits, something like that. So, it's one thing.
The question is, are these because of the repeated requests from the same virtual machine or because of
that I don't know, but that's easy to figure out, and yeah, that would be the main thing, right? Compare this against a simple cache, not a compact cache.
Yeah, because what? Okay, and that's for content hits, right? I think what you can start by doing, regardless of how poor the results seem, I think it is important for us to get some numbers in terms of what is the relative influence of the various optimizations.
Yeah.
The caching optimization, where the parameter is the size of the cache, and the head scheduling optimization.
Okay.
And I guess the third optimization actually, there are four optimizations. The third optimization is the write deduplication, right? Which I thought we decided to give up on that.
No. What I was saying is that it doesn't make that much difference. But it was because of the workflow I was using, because when I was trying that, I was using Postma, and we saw that Postma was the best option because of the metadata, and you don't see copies.
Mm-hmm.
That much copies, as compared to rewrite the copies directly to the device.
Yeah, the possibility of, actually the possibility of getting exactly the same content is pretty small, unless it is in fact content that is exact duplicate. For instance, the same file, the same, you know, same distribution, so there is a lot of content similarity. But if you are going to create data which is dependent on user interaction in any way, then mm-hmm. the likelihood of getting the same data to be written to the disk is pretty small. Really, really small, right?
Yeah.
So the question is how much benefit can we get from write optimization by reducing the number of writes? I think that is something that we need to reconsider, because it may be the case that the probability of that, of those duplicate writes, may be really small, unless you make file copies. If you just copy one file into a different location or something like that.
Yeah, that would be the idea.
Accidental copies is probably, the probability of accidental copies is almost zero, or is...
Yeah, it is zero.
So unless you really copy files...
That was the idea, right? The cool thing with the module is that when you copy files, the copies will get to... I mean, you copy and delete, the copies will be maintained by the module.
Right, but I'm talking about the write deduplication.
Ah, for the write, yeah.
If you want to intentionally make copies, then it doesn't make any sense to deduplicate.
No, but the idea for the write deduplication, the last thing I was commenting is not the optimization is not doing the write right now and delay it for later. And what I was doing is send the request as a low priority request using CFQ. So that write copy would be performed when it's idle.
I see your point, but if it's a duplicate write, it's probably on purpose. And if you're doing this on purpose, then we can automatically choose to make those duplicate writes in idle time.
Yeah, so...
So which means then, you know, so low activity, and the system is at low activity, that's when we make the duplicates.
Exactly, so, but because these are low priority requests, they will actually be performed at that time.
So I guess my point is that, are we adding, is the right deduplication optimization adding too much complexity for little benefit? Is how much benefit are we getting by...
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's...
Because we certainly need to make those write operations. If we eliminate the write operations completely, then it's a big deal. Then we certainly are getting something out of that. But we don't want to eliminate the writes. The reason we have those writes is to make duplicates on purpose. So my feeling is that
the good thing is that, for example, for some workloads it might be very convenient, because if you choose not to write the copy, you have to write the metadata, right? The mapping.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if you're copying a very large file, a very, very large file while doing some other stuff, you can reduce all the writings to writing a single metadata block.
A single metadata block.
And everything will be consistent.
the,
because the mapping structure is much, much more, much, much less big than, much, much more smaller than the whole thing. So in that case, it might be very convenient.
It's very convenient, certainly that's true, but I guess the having duplicates accidentally, the probability of that is really small, right?
Yeah.
If we do want to, if we do want to make duplicates, then we want to have duplicates on disk. And so those writes cannot be eliminated. So, you know, the more I think about this write optimization, to me it seems that we are actually, the write optimization is, the only time it would be beneficial is when there are these accidental duplicates, which is the probability of those is zero.
But what happens with this workload just copying a large file? You see that the response time would be instantaneous.
That's certainly interesting. The question is how useful it is in real workloads. When there are copies that are being made, if you would make them, the only place I see these copies being made is in backup. Right, when you have backup.
Yeah.
When you want to.
Yeah, and when you want to back it, you want to actually get that thing done right now.
Not necessarily. I mean, you can do it at a later time, but then we are talking about offline deduplication. I mean, you fall into the same category as Venti and Foundation and all those other systems.
No. I mean, the offline operation would be to actually copy the thing, not remove the duplicate.
So what I'm saying is that the workloads in which you do have multiple copies of data.
It's in that kind of
application like backup. And certainly you want to deduplicate data there for good, for permanently, not temporarily, right? Because the read access performance is not so critical.
Or for example, another workflow is the mail thing. If we see that, for example, for a forum, we actually create copies.
Mail is certainly a good example. Yeah. So with mail, there will be duplicates. Yeah, that's a good point.
But actually, we are not sure about how it works. I'm not even sure if this, maybe this. Mail servers make their own duplication, or for example, a mail forwarder to many mailboxes is being just referenced by these guys instead of having an actual copy. I don't know. So that's why the mail traces would be great to have.
Yeah, like I said, I spoke to Eric and he said that he's going to give it another try. Talk to him sometime later this week, maybe on Friday or something, to see how far he got. But he's going to try once again to get mail traces. But the question about mail servers already deduplicating mails, I think it's not true.
And also, the other question was, misaligned blocks won't help us. Right?
That's a bigger problem, which is which has to be solved by other techniques somehow.
Yeah.
If mail. By the way, did you get block checksums for the mail server by any chance?
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah, there are a lot of copies. I don't remember the number, but it's very big. I think the biggest study.
No, I mean if they're all blocks which are zero, then then
we can, that was the other question. Yeah,
if you can find out an answer to that, non-zero, how much similarity there are in non-zero blocks for the mail server.
Okay.
That would be very, very useful information.
Okay.
And, you know, I think you already did this analysis earlier.
Yeah.
So the,
yeah, there was a specific block that was too frequent, and we were assuming that was that those were the zeros. But I never actually confirmed that those are the zeros. But I can do that.
Yeah, I guess you could, right? But even if it's not, even if it's just one block, it's unlikely that it makes it is relevant semantically.
Exactly. If so if it, even if it's not zero, it might be FFF. I mean,
So I guess we need to look at the frequency distribution of the similar of the duplicated blocks. If there's it's very if it's a normal distribution, then we are really lucky. But if it's something more skewed distribution, then it's going to be a problem. And for mail, we have to think about a different kind of solution.
Yeah.
But in any case, I think at this point we have two optimizations, caching and head positioning, and possibly the third one is
the copying.
Yeah, artificial creation of duplicate content. I think these are the three optimizations that that we need to evaluate independently and find out how much improvements that are observed. The one workload that you do have is all those user desktop workloads.
Yeah,
I suggest for you to look at that as well.
Yeah.
The VMs?
You know, the web servers, we also have the trace for that.
From Merit?
Yeah.
So that's the trace that you're currently working with, right?
Yeah. And also additionally, the desktops on the lab.
Yeah, so with the desktops in the lab, do you see...
I haven't seen them. Actually, I haven't replayed anything with those.
That would be interesting. So you have at least four desktop.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this could be similar to file server for the lab, right?
Yeah.
Is that right, or are there some issues with that? Would we see, I mean, if we had a file server for the entire lab, would we have? The only parts that will not be in the file server will be related to the distribution, the operating system distribution.
No, because I'm actually getting everything. I can separate with what is what because everybody's working with partitions, but what makes more sense, having the whole, the access to the whole disk or having access just to homes?
I think you can start with accesses to
the whole disk.
Yeah, to the whole disk, but it probably makes, I mean, these are two different scenarios. If you have a thin client scenario, where everything is on the remote system, then it would make sense for the whole disk. But if it's a file server environment, then it makes more sense for the user homes only to be part of the trace. So I would suggest that
these are two different workloads.
These are two different workloads,
okay.
And then we should look at them separately.
Okay. Which is good because we don't have that much workload.
That's true. I guess you know what the next steps are, right?
Yeah, I feel
I don't see you very happy with the how this project is going. Is that
no,
right?
No. The thing is that we are not seeing that much. The results are not, the numbers are not helping.
Yeah.
But that's always the case. Right?
Yeah, it is always the case. And also, it depends on what kind of expectations you have from these numbers and how much expectation you have. And also, you have to also put the workload look at the workload in the right perspective. So the workloads that we that you have been looking at so far are these two web servers.
Yeah.
Right? Which in fact are fairly underutilized from what I understand.
Also, yeah.
So which means that there is not a whole lot of activity going on.
Yeah.
And it may be really true that all the common blocks are in fact cached in memory because this server is really one of our very high-end servers from what I understand. It has, 16 gigabytes of memory or some crazy amount of memory like that. So it is possible that all the common data is in fact in memory. So and the data that's being retrieved from disk are the data that's unique for each VM. So that's it's certainly possible.
Yeah,
so
it's really not the best for
So we need to look at, for instance, what is the dynamic similarity and the static similarity, and then put the we can calculate static and dynamic similarity based on the data that we have, right?
Yeah.
For the web server workloads, and put them in the graphs,
context.
In the graphs that we already plotted, and see what improvement you expect.
Yeah.
And then see what improvement you get.
Yeah.
And if these two match, I think at this point we have to look at it very objectively, and different workloads will fall at different points in these two graphs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The important thing is to see. I mean, if it falls. The whole thing is this, and it falls very near to zero. Thing is real improvement, and we see good improvement, then it's perfect because it makes it the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think we don't want to say that everyone should use our system, right? If the workload falls in a certain area of these two dynamic and static similarity graphs, then
it would make sense to use this
optimization.
Yeah.
But if you do not have substantial static or dynamic similarity in your system, then please do not use our system.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Yeah.
Because it's not going to help. It will add overhead or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I think we have to look at this more objectively. And I think not to have any expectations beyond the point that we will evaluate these workloads objectively. Map these to the two graphs that we have, that basically the standardized static and dynamic similarity graphs. And once, even before running our experiments, we should have a good idea what to expect based on those static and dynamic similarity numbers. And if you get something that is way off from what we expect, then we may want to take a closer look as to what we are doing wrong.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. The other thing was that I was looking at some ESX specs, and I cannot find anything regarding the memory deduplication stuff. It's like it was on that paper, but it's not advertised or anything. So if they were actually doing that, it would be advertised, right?
It could also be true that they built an experimental system and then realized that
it's not worth it.
And they published it, but then they realized maybe lots of things could happen. Maybe it's just too complex.
Yeah.
And the reliability of the system goes down if you want to utilize this optimization. And the performance benefit does not outweigh the complexity.
Okay.
So they decided not to add it in the product. So it could be, there are lots of explanations for what happened.
And for then, I saw it like on some discussion threads and stuff. I read something related to this, and it's not implemented, but it's something like an open idea that people might be trying. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
It's possible that there are
some,
a couple of open source developers that are working on this idea,
and
it makes a lot of sense.
From what I understood in that is that, it was an informal discussion, but there are performance issues with doing the direct memory deduplication. you lose, somehow you lose locality on your memory. Yes. It makes a little bit sense.
You mean cache, in the cache locality?
For TLBs and caches.
Hmm. Yeah, that is possible, but yeah.
Well,
we don't have to. I guess the point is that people are looking into this optimization.
Yeah.
And
but we are relying on it. Maybe you will.
Yeah, you're right. We are sort of offloading that responsibility to the virtual machine monitor. And I think it's okay to do that. I mean, we don't need to solve all the problems.
Yeah, and that's how research should work. Yeah, I mean, you focus on a problem, assuming that...
The other problem, especially because it's already published.
Yeah.
Even if we solve it ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we'll solve it in a completely different way, right? We won't do the kind of things that, that the ESX server solution proposed.
Yeah.
But even so, I don't think we need to invest our time in that direction.
Okay.
I think there are more fundamental questions that we need to answer in terms of the utility of this approach.
Yeah.
There is, this optimization is assuming that, in fact, it is important to have deep, you know, IoT duplication. And then, if you can make an argument that IoT duplication is important, then maybe you can solve this other problem, which is memory deduplication.
Yeah.
But solving the memory deduplication problem without making the case for IoT duplication is not a good does not make much sense, right?
Yeah.
So there is a sort of dependency that
yeah.
is inherent in this
okay.
these two problems.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, Ricardo. So actually, I recorded our session.
Oh.
I started recording all our sessions.